Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Savage Nation. I'm the newly revised Michael Savage, back live. Now we're going to talk about Brutus McClellan and what it means. That's a big story. I mean, we got to talk about McClellan. Brutus was always interesting to me. And of course, Scott McClellan was always a puzzlement to me. How could a moron like that have been a press secretary? He, I thought, was hired by Bush because he was so bad as a press secretary, he made Bush sound literate. And I always felt that Bush used McClellan in order to make himself sound, you know, more literate, because McClellan was like blah, blah, blah. Now, the Austin Wonder from the old Texas political family sticks a knife in Bush's back. Now, the question is, why am I going to talk about it when everyone's been talking about it all week? I was away, you know, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, last night, got home 1 in the morning. I was on a friend's Gulf Stream and at a friend's beach house and went to Maui. And thank God I'm back because, hey, I can't handle the sun. There's nothing for me to do there. The local population is filled basically with haters. They hate white people. And the hostility is overwhelming. It's just like wandering into a mistake wherever you go on Maui, unless you're in places like the Ritz-Carlton. You have to watch out. Definitely a dangerous place if you go to the wrong beach at the wrong time or the wrong place or the wrong people. But they, you know, you wouldn't hear that from the Hawaii Visitors Bureau because all is well. You know, everything. Everyone loves each other, and it's a place of love and peace. So, look, to each his own. I'm not a beach person. I'm more into weather than climate. I mean, what's the idea of a perfect climate? Summer, almost summer, after summer, and about to be summer. Skin cancer, varieties of skin cancer, almost skin cancer. And more skin cancer. The local sports, sitting in the sun and having coconuts hit you on the head. But there were a few high and low points, I got to tell you. The high point was sitting in the cockpit of the plane with these young guys who were the pilots on the takeoff. I mean, I've done it once. Years ago when you flew commercial, they used to let you do it. Can you believe it? There was a time. Can you believe there was a time in my life that a passenger might be invited into the cockpit of an airplane? But our friends from Saudi Arabia changed all that, didn't they? Our dear, good friends from Saudi Arabia, the worshippers of murder and mayhem, changed all of that. Now it's like flying in a prison plane. It's like every airplane is being, you're basically like being transported by federal marshals from one lockup to another. I don't care what class you're in, you're going from one prison camp to another. It's called airports. And the crew basically have had to become air marshals. So not their fault. It's our friends from Saudi Arabia, as I well told you. So the best part was taking off in the G3. Was it land? No, landing in the G3. These guys did a great job. It's really tight in there. There's a lot of switches. They're older planes. I mean, this plane was at 85. You know, incredible interior. But as smooth as a 737, really fabulous airplane. And I still won't go anywhere ever again, even though it's a friend's Gulfstream. I don't want to go anywhere ever. It doesn't matter to me. Don't you understand? It doesn't matter. Now, as far as the vacation goes, I'm talking now. I'll do McClellan in a minute. Give me a break. You can call me at 1-800-449-8255 if you want. I'm going to talk about McClellan. I'm going to talk about Germany unveiling a memorial to homosexual victims of the Holocaust. And then I'm going to say, not so fast, Buster. How about the essay, Hitler's Gay Murderers? See, there's always a sympathy when it comes to gays. They're always innocent victims. Always victims. Oh, get out the violin. But what you don't know is Ernst Röhm, the head of the brown shirts, was a rabid, insane, authoritarian homosexual who liked little boys. And one of the reasons Hitler had his SS destroy the SA was because they were homosexuals running the SA. That you wouldn't see in the news. that's verboten, but it's a part of historical fact. Now, let me go back to Maui. First of all, I want to go back to my little grass shack in Kealakekua, Hawaii. Oh, and I have a good note. On Maui, you know the mountain, the famous extinct volcano? Haleakala has not been renamed Haleakala Akbar yet. Haleakala has not yet been renamed Haleakala Akbar. Thank you. It is still Haleakala. Turn it off now. They got the point already. So here's the funny. Here's the high point and the low point. I've given you a number of points. So I'm just rattling. What was the best part of the trip for Michael Savage? Okay, first you got to know the group. It was a beautiful friend's home on the beach. So luxury, excellent, fine. I had a room right over the surf, pounding surf, loved it. No allergies. I knew that there'd be no allergies, but I'd rather have allergies and let my mind operate than have no allergies and be mindless. So it's the trade-off. The only alternative is I have to move to Newfoundland or Saskatchewan or, you know, Finland or something where I can get an ocean and no, but then, whatever. Iceland or Reykjavik. The high point for me, well, here's the group. The group was myself and Mrs., honorable number one son and lady friend, honorable daughter, and honorable number one son's best friend and his girlfriend, all in one house, but it was large enough where we weren't in each other's hair. So that's A. So it was mainly people in their late 20s and early 30s and the older guys. And they accommodate. I mean, they have to accommodate, you know. The boogie boarding I hadn't done in 20 years, and I loved it, I got to tell you. A little water in the ear that I'm sure I'll pay for it, but the boogie boarding was great. Hey, first time I ever wore a wetsuit, I'm willing to try anything new if it's reason. So I put on a wetsuit to really revolutionize the whole chicken thing about water. Ooh, it's cold. In fact, I really love the wetsuit because now I can do it in Northern California. I can start using the water here. Wetsuit is good. Boogie boarding is great. A lot of fun getting the salt water in the mouth. Then that was not really the high point. That was fun and good and invigorating. Here's the high point. On the last night of the trip, already everybody had a few interchanges with everyone else, and the let's say the bloom was off the rose. You know how it works. You know, you start out, but after a day or two, you're already brushing into each other's shoulders, and a little of this and a little of that, and the sparks flew over. Who took the papaya? Who took the blueberries? I mean, it's not the money. When you buy a box of blueberries, why would someone eat the entire box of blueberries when you had that thing ready for the morning? So it was like reaching a point where I was hiding last night's dinner in the back of the fridge for the next day's lunch for fear someone might glom it on the way, you know. So the last night, I didn't want to go out anymore. So I said, you guys run along. You go to the fancy restaurant. You have a great meal up on the hill. Enjoy it. I love it. Well, what are you going to do, Mike? Well, I brought pasta home from last night's dinner, which I loved. I had the guy make a double order. And I took it home, and I'm having that tonight. And I brought my own cheese and grater, by the way, from the local Italian restaurant. I got to tell you, I know no one travels with that. I brought organic garlic, and I brought my own cheese and grater. And I brought a case. Actually, we had three cases of wine. We went through one of them. The only wine anyone drank was the wine that was the cheapest, which I brought, which is the New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, because it's great, just great stuff. And I drank it like water, in order to kill the pain. It was like a Jackie Gleason. I'm feeling no pain. You know, you had to do it there because the emptiness, oh, God. You know, I wasn't doing radio. I stayed off the internet. I didn't care about whether Obama moved. Who cared? You know that for 5 days I didn't have to care about Obama or McCain, whether he came out wearing a dress to show that he was in favor of a gay marriage. I didn't read it, any of it. I didn't go on the internet. No emails, nothing. In fact, for the first time in my life, I put up a message that said I'm away. I'll get back to you whenever. I hate when I get those and I send an email because I'm mad at the person for doing it. But I decided there's a reason for which I did it. Anyway, as I was saying, the last night already, I didn't want any more with the restaurants and the fancy and the 8 hours. They went out. It was getting dark. I took all my clothes off except for a pair of trunks. I took out the spaghetti. I reheated it in the microwave. I put my grated cheese on it. I put garlic all over it. I brought the bottle of wine out and the bottle of club soda. I sat on an outdoor veranda under an eave, like an outdoor room, in the dark, no lights on. And all I heard was the pounding of the surf, and I ate my dinner, and I felt like myself, and that was it. And that was the high point. And I'll be back to talk about it.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Now, the reason we're playing that from The Godfather is because of the Brutus situation going on in the White House, where everyone is jumping ship and stabbing the president in the back, including apparently a lifetime friend from Austin, Texas, this jerk McClellan. And I'm not going to talk to the veracity of whether he's telling the truth or not. It's almost irrelevant. We all know that Iraq was a mistake, and there's no point arguing over that. The issue is, why is McClellan doing the Brutus now? And there are many explanations, obviously, to make a buck and sell a book. He's got to throw some dirt on the scene, you know. But nobody would do that with a powerful family like the Bush family, especially if they're from Texas. Just trust me on that one. There's more to it than meets the eye. And what I think is going on here, and this is way off, you know, I didn't read this anywhere. This is me. I believe that they fear that if the revolutionary Obamaites seize control of the nation in the next election, and I'll repeat that, should the revolutionary Obamaites seize control of the nation in the next election, guys like McClellan are distancing themselves from Mr. Bush and stabbing him in the back because they fear that there could be a war crimes trial at The Hague, and they don't want to be put on a U.S. Marshal's plane to go to the world court. Now you say, well, how could that be? I didn't hear that on The Golfer, and how could it be? Because I know it goes through people's minds. It's the same reason that industrialists on the level of Rupert Murdoch are predicting an Obama victory. These people are also afraid of repercussions of the revolutionary chronicles of the Obama maniacs should they seize control of the nation. They're trying to curry favor with them. That's why guys like, you know, of that level are basically saying that they like him. He's a good guy. They don't like him. They know he's not a good guy. They're terrified of him. But they figure they can curry favor by saying that they like him. But they also know which way the wind blows. You understand that? So that's the way that goes. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the McClellan thing as time develops in this hour, the trip a little bit here and there. So let me tell you another thing about the trip. First of all, thank God I brought a lot of books. I only read one of them and a part of it. I brought, you know, about a half a suitcase full of books, as I used to do in the old days. I watch zero television. There's loads of screens, like 32 screens in the house. Funny enough, though, all I wanted to do tonight was read. So I brought with me a volume of Steinbeck's, John Steinbeck. And the piece I read was Travels with Charlie. Now, the interesting thing is, I never read it. Sure, we all heard of it. But Charlie was his dog. I didn't know Charlie was a poodle till I read this. I almost fell over. He was the same color as Teddy. And it's about him going out in a camper truck around America to meet America in the early 60s in the changing country, John Steinbeck. And his poodle was with him, which is great. I mean, it was amazing. I mean, I knew that it was a dog. I didn't know it was a poodle. The thing you should know is that Steinbeck is a certifiably great writer in a certain, you know, in a certain time frame. He came from a certain time. He's a little ponderous for today's times. The literature is superb if you're into literature and you have the patience to read and really absorb. So I'm not going to judge what the other man, you know, wants out of a book today. But The Travels with Charlie is an interesting book, which I'll talk about at another time. I'm just glad I had it with me. In reading Travels with Charlie, there are a lot of literary references. One of the literary references is to an old Irish, we call it a novel, series of novels, called Tristram Shandy. Now, this is an amazing story unto itself. I mean, I see something in passing and I leap on it. I had seen reference to Tristram Shandy in the past in my literary days. I never paid much attention to it. Written in 1759, I believe, 10 volumes of A Gentleman's Life. Now, here's the interesting thing about that series of books that he refers to. It's a long narrative about a man's life, but he doesn't tell a story straight. He tells it with tremendous amounts of diversions in a technique called free association. And what struck me about that is that I do a free association radio show. That is when I tell stories. When I do politics, I tend to stay with the politics, but I can shift out of the politics rapidly into a personal story or vice versa, as you know, because I understand the attention span of the audience is not that long. And also I get bored if I start to get too trapped into the ABC, CBS, NBC, blah, blah, blah stories. So I'll tell the personal. On the other hand, I know many of you are listening for the political, so I shift. But I use what's known as free association. Many of you have written me and said, Michael, I love your your stories. I really don't even like your politics, but I love your family stories when you were a kid, blah, 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 when the chrome was thick and the blah, blah, blah. Well, I've actually started my autobiography. I've been working on it for a few months. I just got back the first transcript of it. And it's pretty amazing, the stories. And I'm going to put it out sort of before the year is over. What I'm getting at is Tristram Shandy. You got to look this up. Has anyone read Tristram Shandy in literature? I can't believe there's a listener to this show who even knows what I'm talking about here. What am I talking about? Who knows Tristram Shandy? Okay, forget about it. So that was in the book. Now, here's the low point of the trip. For the first 24 hours that we got there late at night on the Gulf. It was a G3, by the way. It was a wonderful airplane, completely redone. But we had to get there late the first night on Saturday. So the next day we had a chef schedule for the whole time because they know I hate to go to restaurants. So for me, because I'm such a troubled human being and they know I don't behave well in restaurants, they got a private chef. Okay, private chef first day, breakfast was good. No problems, no complaints. Actually excellent. She did a good job. Lunch, a big bear of a man walks in. Excellent cook. He had a few little quirks like a certain hum that was borderline, could pick up the knife and kill everyone in the house and no one would find you for weeks kind of hum. Big guy with a like if you asked him a question, it was like a huge hum kind of thing with a laugh attached that we all attempted to duplicate over the next 12 hours to see who could do it better. And we had each other doubled up on the floor because the sound was beyond comprehension. I can't repeat it, nor would it be funny to you. However, he was planning a gigantic dinner for us the first night consisting of so-called local shrimp from his friend, the shrimp magnate. Yeah, okay. Well, I don't know how they could consider them local shrimp because they were defrosting all day in the sink and they came in a block of ice. Anyway, to make a long story short, he's working all day on the dinner and something happened. He had to leave. He backs out of the house unannounced, knocks over the keypad that opens the gate and disappears. And we're trapped in the house because nothing would work. Nothing would work and we're trapped in the house. I'll tell you more about the special shrimp dish in Hawaii when I come back.
Savage.
This is breaking news on the Savage Nation. I'm going to break my reverie and my stream of consciousness about McClellan and my trip to Hawaii. There's just been a huge, huge ruling from the Texas Supreme Court. The Texas Supreme Court has ruled that all of the children of the Mormon Church should be returned to their parents. Now, I was the only one in the media who was on their side. You know what the leprechaun did. The leprechaun panicked. I've played the sound bites, and I'm going to do it over and over again until that green creature apologizes. I hope they sue the networks that called it sex abuse and slavery and sex slavery. I really pray to God that it just happened, okay? In a crushing blow to the state of Texas's seizure of children from polygamous sex ranch, the Texas Supreme Court ruled minutes ago that child welfare officials overstepped their authority. The children should go back to their parents. This is a huge victory for you, you idiot. This is a huge victory for you Christophobes out there. Because although they took the children away from a Christian sect now, tomorrow it could be Jews, the next day it could be Muslims, the next day it could be Hindus, the next day it could be gays. You don't let the state take children just because they like to play Nazi. Now, the next step is they sue. I pray to God that the FLDS Church sues Child Protective Services. I pray that the people who did this go to jail, and I hope that they then sue the networks who let their rabid mad dogs... They're rabid, mad dogs like the leprechaun, in my opinion, make false claims against this church. The rabid, mad dog leprechaun said that was child sex slavery. Nancy Graceless should go get thrown off the air by GE, in my opinion, for what she did to these people. I hope they sue them for everything they're worth. Those mental midgets. You didn't hear the sex abuse talking heads montage, did you? Well, I'll tell it to you later. But I'm right. That's all. I was right all along. I'm always on the right side. You know, you don't have to like me. In fact, I don't care whether you like me or not. It would be nice if you do. But I'm not in this business to be liked. This is not a popularity contest, and I'm not running for anything. I would rather that you found out that I can pretty much tell you what's going on better than anybody in the media. That's all that I care about. I want you to know what's going on for your own safety and your own sanity. That's what I do this for. I'm telling you right now. Believe me, I could chuck the whole thing tomorrow and it wouldn't change my lifestyle one way or the other. And that's what I want to leave it at that. What motivates me is the desire to keep this country going a little while longer because I know what's coming. If guys like me step aside, you're going to live in a revolutionary America that you're not going to recognize. You would never believe the country you live in. You want to let the brown shirts take over the country? Go ahead. That's what will happen. The SA will take this country over, the equivalent of the Nazi SA, if you let these maniac revolutionaries around Obama win this election. You may not know it because he's a slick operator, and he's got really great propagandists around him. That guy's a chain smoker. When have you last seen them show a picture of him with a cigarette in his hand, you idiots, you? You believe everything you see? Al Gore's a green maniac, huh? Hey, Mr. Green, you idiot, you. The only green he is the money that goes in his hand. So let me tell you what happened that night. So the chef's the hummer, and he was good. The lunch he made was very tasty. Everything was good. But he had the hum, and the hum was borderline, could pick up the cleaver and kill everyone easily. A huge guy wearing like a robe, like a weird robe. So when I see someone like that, the first thing I do is I get into their brain by, you know, I talk to them, how's your recipe? It's my way of putting, like, a probe into the brain. He was a nice enough guy. Just the hum and the laugh was off to the extent. It was like Lenny in like one of Steinbeck's novels, who breaks the animals' necks, doesn't even know it. So I'm going to make you special fish and shrimp tonight. Great, wonderful. And where's the shrimp from? My friend, their local shrimp, meal of brick frozen solid, and he leaves them in the sink all day. Right away, I know it's Tomainville. That's to start with. That night, as I said to you, he came back to cook, and something happened on the phone. He had to speed out, and he backed out and drove over the keypad that opens the gate, and sped away. And we were locked in, the gate locked shut. Soon thereafter, there arrives the girl cook, the breakfast chef in the group, and she said, he had to go on an emergency, I'm going to cook for you. And the eyes are ready, Maui Wowie combo. Combo Maui Wowie and a few other substances, in my opinion. It looked like she was like laid back for the night with her designated driver somewhere, and she was called in because he had to go away, and now she was there. Now, here's the weird thing. I come into the kitchen, and she's there, and I'm wearing a clean new yellow, like, shirt. And I said, well, do you have an apron I could put on for dinner? I don't want to stain my yellow shirt. She turns to me, and she says, I like my men dirty and raw. That's how I like my men, dirty and raw. I said, what? She says, that's how you guys are best, dirty and raw. I said, wow. Now, there was another guy in the group, a lot younger than me. I heard that when he reached into the refrigerator for a drink, she put her hands around his back and gave him like a rub job on the back. He got icky over that. So that was number two. So we knew already we're dealing with major league problems in the psycho department. But we figured, you know what, we'll have the meal and forget about it. I'd throw the shrimp over the side to the palm rats because I wasn't going to eat them. Well, I didn't have to bother. I didn't get a chance to eat him. Let me explain why. Because Maui Wowie, and what she's doing in the kitchen there, I have no idea because I left. I went outside to drink wine in the dark. Ready, serve ready. It's dark. We got the appetizer, the entree, Miss Private Chef. We hear her singing, and all of a sudden, boom, a crash, glass shattered. The entire shrimp dish, which must have cost $100 worth of shrimp, was on the floor with broken glass, unsalvageable. I didn't even get up. I knew. So one of the other people, one of the young ladies, went and came back with the report from the front lines and reported that the shrimp were all on the floor with glass. And Maui Wowie chef was on her hands and knees talking to the shrimp, saying, oh, how are you, little shrimpy poos? Oh, little shrimpy poos, I'm so sorry. I said, oh, my God, did we miss a bullet here? So to make a long story short, it was wine, salad, and bread, which was better than the shrimpy poos, I can guarantee you. Now to get back to regular programming on the show, the Steinbeck book saved me, to be honest with you. The one sustaining virtue of the trip was sitting in the air-conditioned house out of the sun, because I really did not want to work on my skin cancer. I saw no reason to work on my skin cancer at all. I cannot understand why people do this. I don't care if you put SP90 on. What are you doing in the sun? Why? What, are you psychotic? I can't understand it. Why do people sit in the sun in this day and age? Mmm, delicious. That's like sitting and drinking butter, like clarified butter. Would you drink clarified butter breakfast Noonan dinner. Nobody would do that. The sun. The sun. Oh, great Ra, shine down on me and make me, you know, feel like I'm in a spa. Why? What are you, Egyptian sun worshippers? I got SP 50, the other SP 70, SP 90. If I walk out, I feel like someone hit me with an X-ray machine. The minute I get out from under the Eve X-ray machine, wherever, I couldn't take it. So I took the, I'm up at dawn anyway. That's the beauty, is the time change. I'm dawn. I'm Mr. Dawn. You sleep with the curtains open. You see, actually, that was the good part. Listening to the surf all night. Well, who wants to sleep after 5:30 anyway? It's a normal time, is to get into that cycle. Dogs get up at that time if you leave them alone. Everything gets up at that time. So then you go on the beach. Is that time is when you go on the beach, and at night. Daytime, you know, only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the noonday sun. Anyhow, here I am giving you the Tristram Shandy version of the show. If ever I refer to the word Tristram Shandy on the show, you'll know what I'm referring to, which is stream of consciousness. Just that's all you have to remember from today's program. It's a takeaway, throwaway 1759 series of novels written by a gentleman. So, for example, so if he says, and then I went to the brothel, for example, in the 10th series, it's a simple story, but there's no direct line in it. It's not linear. If he says to you, I started to go to the brothel in wherever, where the city was, but on the way my shoe broke. And then because the shoe broke, I had to go to the shoemaker. So I went to the shoemaker, and I took off my shoe and showed it to him, but I smelled a great smell of pastries coming from the back of the shoe store, and it reminded me of my grandmother's. And then on and on, 80 pages later, he gets back to the brothel. You know what I'm saying? That's called stream of consciousness. That's what I do for you, ladies and gentlemen. It's a technique that I didn't develop for radio. It's because who I am. It's how I tell my stories. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Yes or no? Raise your hand if you don't, because I can't see it anyway. So we could go back to any one of four stories I've introduced. As you know, this show is the equivalent of a Persian miniature painting, as opposed to a paint-by-numbers John Nagy radio show. Most shows in the business are John Nagy. There's maybe four or five, maybe three areas of a painting that need some color, and that is what you get for 3 hours a day. There's a color one, a color two, and a color three, and big globs of red, green, and yellow. And if they're really creative, you get a blue in there. With me, you get an intense Persian miniature for the people who appreciate that kind of work. I do it. And the day you don't appreciate it, I shall no longer be on the radio. So now let me repeat what's in the Persian miniature today. Trip to Hawaii. However, there were at least 50 elements mentioned in the trip to Hawaii, ranging from the type of aircraft, type of house, time of day, type of meal, crazy cook, boogie boarding, skin cancer. So within that story, there are 12 stories you can relate to. Now, the next is the Scott McClellan story. I played a piece from The Godfather. Play the cannoli thing, so in case they forgot
Leave
already.
The gun. Take the cannoli.
Now, it's very funny, you know, why Fat Clemenza had him knocked off, because he was a rat. He ratted out the, you know, he had to sniff. Remember, Paulie, where's Paulie? Paulie was sick that day, and that was when they tried to knock off The Godfather. So McClellan is like the rat. McClellan is like Paulie. Actually, McClellan is closer, in my opinion, to the character referred to by James Cagney in You Rat, You Dirty Rat. That's the one I wanted to find, but I couldn't get that. But this guy's a rat. The guy's a rat. Even if he's telling the truth, he's ratting out the boss. Who does a thing like this? Unless he feels the boss is due for a big fall, and that the boss is going to be dragged to The Hague or something like that by the Obama revolutionaries. If they seize control of this country, they'll turn him over yet in handcuffs. And he doesn't want to go along for the ride to The Hague to be tried by child molesters in the low country, so to speak. So that's topic number two or three or 30. And then, of course, there's the Texas Supreme Court ruling saying return the kids to their parents, you dirty rats. And as another subtopic, which is the bums in the media who drummed up the hatred for the Church of Latter-day Saints, because they're sick people. They're mentally ill people who fake it out. One claims to be a liberal. The other fakes out the conservative and wraps himself in a flag. But by what he's done and what he stands for, this guy's no conservative. The guy's nothing. He stands for nothing. The guy is a pastrami, as far as I'm concerned. He is a lox. He's a human lox, disguising himself as a journalist. He's a lox, a tall lox who likes loofahs. I'll be right back.
Savage. I have a higher loyalty than my loyalty necessarily to my past work. That's a loyalty to the truth, and it's a loyalty to the values I was raised on. I talk about my upbringing in a political family that talked about the nobility of public service and the importance of speaking up and talking about making a positive difference. I hope that this book will help do that. And I think people that read it will see it for what it is, and they'll see that I tried to come, you know, I struggled as I went through this book process to come to grips with the realities of how things went so badly off course and what we can learn from that to help make Washington a better place to for governing and for coming together to solve the most pressing priorities that face this country. You
know. Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
You were always interested in politics and history. I remember you talking about Hitler back in 33.
I still read a lot. I got good stuff in there.
You were around the old-timers who dreamed of how the family should be organized, how they based them on the old Roman legions and called them machines, the capos and the soldiers, and it worked.
Yeah, it worked. Those were the great old days, you know? And we was like the Roman Empire. The Corleone family was like the Roman Empire.
It was once.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Oh, the power of sound. The power of sound. His master's voice. Welcome back to Travels with Michael on the Savage Nation. Now, here's a question for those of you who like the occasional literary reference. We're going to talk McClellan and this and that, but here's one. You know, I was referring to a book I read, Travels with Charlie. I've only gotten halfway through it on this trip, and I didn't know Charlie was a poodle, and a gray one at that. Unbelievable. So I have a question for you. The title of Steinbeck's incredible book, which is one of the last he wrote, not the last, but one of them, is Travels with Charlie, where he travels around with his poodle in a truck looking for the real America, or looking to see what changes America had gone through. Written, I think, in 61, some whatever, 62. And Steinbeck was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature on October 25th, 1962, but that's not the most important thing. Here's the question. The title of his book, Travels with Charlie, was based upon another book. Can anyone tell me what that other book was and who wrote it? Whoever does gets a free prize. Phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. This is because I've got to feed the brains of those who like literary references. Kathy, and on WOR, you have a comment to make. Go ahead, please.
I wish I knew the answer to your question, but I wanted to thank you for every single day you bring up literary and film classic references, and it's one of the main reasons that I listen, and I wish that the public schools would push the classics and would give the kids the opportunities.
Oh, no, they don't want to teach Steinbeck. He wasn't communistic enough for them. They teach Jenny Has Two Mommies or Harvey Has Two Daddies. That's their idea of English literature today, or Whitey Was a Racist. That passes for literature today.
All that passes, and when you ask why can't they read positive, good, entertaining classic novels and Shakespearean plays, they say, and I've been told this, those have no relevance in today's society. They were written.
That's right. Well, with illiterates who are on crack, that has no relevance. When the politicians are illiterate, what do you expect from the students?
I was told you don't.
When you have a president who boasts that he's never read a book, that he only reads magazines, and even that is rare. What do you expect in a country that man debases literacy?
People feel it's the more you read, not the quantity, the quality that you read. They feel it's better to read lots and lots of little books than one really good book.
No, what you have to do is you have to read literature, not just books. Literature, where each paragraph has depth to it and you have to think. And that there's, the human mind is designed for thinking, by the way, thinking. We have a generation that's designed not to think, even though within them is a desire to think. The educational system is so screwed up that it teaches the children to be rabid automatons that follow orders. And the orders they're following are that of the social left revolutionaries, which is why we are in the state we are in, and why a man as unknown and as unqualified as Barack Hussein Obama could have gotten this far. Do you know that Obama is a smoker? A chain smoker, and they've never shown a picture of him smoking. Do you have any idea what kind of propaganda we're living through, Kathy?
They all they want you to do is extrapolate facts. They don't want bloodless robots in the future. The goal in the of all the schools is only to teach.
All right. Well, of course, that way it makes it safe for the brown shirts to take over the country. Only they'll call themselves greens this time instead of brown shirts. I appreciate your appreciation. WOR, New York City. Bill, go ahead, please, quickly. Go ahead, make your point.
Yeah, Dr. Mike, Mr. Talk Show Extraordinaire, Profiteer, not Puppeteer. I wanted to say that I think this is Bush's send-off from this man who wrote this book, and that it's a long time coming, and it's in the cosmic cards.
Hey, Bill, do you think that this is the sign of a man with character and quality, or don't you think it's the sign of a traitor? Irrespective of whether or not Bush is a good or bad president, and I think he's one of the worst in history, and I've said so, I think that everything he's done is wrong, with the exception of maybe one or two things. Don't you think this shows something else? Don't you think this is astoundingly traitorous?
I think there's a breakdown on all levels of society, but I think this is in the cosmic cards, and I think it's people are applauding this. I feel it. I think that it's long overdue.
Well, let's look at the motivation. Obviously, he wants to sell a lot of books, so he's throwing in with the opposition. That's a given. And the book will sell well, obviously, because he's being treated like a prince now by the vermin in the media. But don't you think he's trying to save his own butt? Should there be war crimes trials held against Bush and Cheney?
I think, Mike, I think it's on all different levels, and I think that there's...
No, I've come up with that theory. I'm not saying it's valid. I have no idea what the man's thinking, but I'm saying, is that an irrational possibility, Bill?
I think so. And, you know, you first said that earlier in the show, and I think so. But I also think that this is a type of send-off, and I think people are going to...
All right, well, I disagree. It's treasonous. And the guy's a rat.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I have a higher loyalty than my loyalty necessarily to my past work. That's a loyalty to the truth, and it's a loyalty to the values I was raised on. I talk about my upbringing in a political family that talked about the nobility of public service and the importance of speaking up and talking about making it positive.
That's the rat, Scott Brutus McClellan, the illiterate jerk who used to work for Bush. And it's a topic that's worth talking about, not so much whether you agree with him or not. I mean, most of you probably do. Some don't. The issue is, why would a human locks like this, and I don't even mean a piece of Nova. I mean, this is not even good locks. This is store-bought locks here talking. Why would this piece of locks do this at this time? Well, obviously, there's a buck in it to attack Bush. But there's another element, and I don't know whether it's operational. I'm throwing out an idea, which is that he's probably afraid that there could be a revolutionary movement in this country under Obama. There's no question he's a revolutionary with leanings towards worldwide socialism. And should the revolutionary zealots take over the country come next January after the election, they're afraid that Bush and Cheney could be brought before a war crimes trial in the International Court in The Hague. And McClellan feels, as one of the spokesmouths who misled the American people and the world for that matter, he might too go before The Hague. So by putting out this book, he's saying, I'm not responsible. I didn't know there were any tracks going to the death camp, so to speak. I mean, on a bigger level, you know, making a reference. I had no idea that the camps were operating. I thought they were making soap. He's saying he didn't know. He had no idea. He was only following orders. That's what it is. Play the Hawaiian music now, because I'm talking about my vacation as well as that. This is bad Hawaiian music. There's excellent Hawaiian music. I ask for slacky guitar music. This is not slacky guitar. This is commercial dreck. but one of these days I'll get the music collection I want in the next world. And instead of 72 virgins, I'll have 72 virgin demos. That wasn't bad. Come on. That's why you listen. You get a kick out of me. I know. They can turn it off, though. They can't hear me. Don't you know yet? The guys who could actually understand what I just said can't double associate. When I say a thing like that and they hear the music, they can't double associate. They're too intelligent. Kids can multitask because they're stupid. And everything they're multitasking with requires almost no intelligence. Most intelligent people I know can't multitask because they're so focused on doing one thing right that they get it right. The other idiots who can multitask are doing everything that requires the brains, let's say, of a chimpanzee on fish oil. Now, in the last hour, in addition to talking about Scott the Rat McClellan, I was mentioning Travels with Charlie by John Steinbeck, which thankfully I had with me and read in the air-conditioned living room while the other folk were boogie boarding and working on their skin cancers. I hope not. And whatever they do, I don't know, running, playing, everything with an ING in it worried me in the sun. So I did something like reading because it was out of the sun. The whole generation has to have an ING on the end of something they do. Would you believe this? The more ing, the more zing, or something like that. Because that's how they've been conditioned to buy things, a flipper, a flapper, a mask, a this. Everything you have to buy something with. You have to have read Brave New World to understand how they've been conditioned that they can't even go out into the forest and enjoy anything without having bought something to enjoy it because it's bad for the economy. Where was I? Oh, so Steinbeck's Travels with Charlie, I was pleasantly surprised to learn he traveled with a poodle. I knew it was a dog. I didn't know it was a poodle. That's good. And he describes the poodle in such a great way, which I'll read to you in a minute. But, and here's the question, and we have a winner, by the way, so don't call. I asked in the last hour, what was the title, Travels with Charlie? Which book was it based upon and who wrote it? Now, we have an answer from a literate man in Eugene, Oregon. Tim, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes. The answer is Travels with a Donkey by Robert Louis Stevenson.
Incredible. How did you know that, sir?
Well, I read it about 40 years ago.
Amazing. That's amazing.
Authors, yeah. All of that stuff kind of sticks with me.
Yeah, but you're from a generation where literature was taught in schools on top of it all. Tim, what can I send you as a present? Is there any title of mine that you would prefer?
Well, something with an autograph.
Let us send you something with an autograph. Please get Tim's address and send it on to our dear friends at the Fulfillment House in Florida. Tell them to send an autographed copy of any of my books. Not all of the books, any of the books. Now we'll go to the callers. We can talk also about the great ruling that came out an hour ago, which is that Mike was right, but it wasn't about me. It was about America and its freedoms. The children unnaturally kidnapped by the state of Texas, Department of Fascism. The Supreme Court of Texas just ruled that the Department of Fascism, known as Child Protective Services, did the wrong thing, okay? And that the rats in the media who egged them on should only go to jail themselves. Their children should be taken away. That's all. Let me take your calls now. Carlton, KNEW, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, in the belly of the beast here, my liberal socialist friends have been telling me that capitalism requires constant economic growth and therefore will fail. In short, what goes up must come down. So I'm calling you to hear your thoughts.
Well, I've heard it before, and of course things go in cycles. There are economic cycles which are not so much up and down as much as a sine curve, but I don't think they understand what a sine curve is, Carlton. You'll have to explain to these geniuses that there have always been cycles in an economic system. However, I'd rather have an economic system with cycles than a system that's a flat line of starvation and deprivation, as you would see in Zimbabwe, where there is no capitalism. Is that where they want to live? Where there's no food production, or they want to live in the Eastern Europe before the wall came down, where there's one salami hanging in a butcher shop in a line around the block? Is that their idea of an economic system? See, what they don't understand is why would the man make more salamis unless he's going to make a profit? He's not going to do it because he wants the guy to enjoy a salami. So there has to be a motivation to making the salami. So in order to make a lot of salamis, you need a capitalist who says, I tell you what, I'm going to make 1,000 salamis with my own money. I'm going to invest it on the chance that I'll sell the 1,000 salamis at a profit. And if I make a better salami, people will buy it. So he makes a better salami than the competition. That's also a benefit of capitalism. So they're wrong. If you look at socialist systems, what you wind up with is starvation and deprivation. So I don't understand where they're coming from. Show me one socialist economic system that is providing good for the people.
You're absolutely correct.
Well, I'm not afraid to deal with these idiots who went to college, because they didn't go to college. They went to brainwashing school. Brainwashing school. They learned how to smoke dope better and how to have sex with their brother-in-law. That's what they learned in college. Play the Hawaiian music. Steinbeck's Political Views, speaking of that. Da, 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 da. I made one mistake. I went out of the house in the car to try to experience the local cuisine. I got bored. It was unreal. I've lived in the islands. I know what to expect. Hold it. I thought maybe things had changed. If you wander into any like shopping area, like in a remote area that is mainly local, so to speak, you're lucky if you come back alive. It's like bring them back alive. It's astounding. You don't want to. I'm telling you. You know that you're gonna leave, you'll lose your car and your clothing and your goods if you go into any of these. Or if you go to the wrong beach, let's say, and you're a white man and you're alone or just with a woman, if you come back in one piece, you're lucky. But no, you're not going to hear that from agent. No, just stay in the hotel. That's all I can recommend. You don't understand what I'm saying to you. You got to know what's going on underneath the surface. This is not good. It's the third world, and it's seething with rage, and it hates everything that has achieved anything. In fact, it hates the world that has given them the double whammy burger that they love so much, and given them the trucks that they love so much, and the machines they love to make noise with. But they hate the world that's provided them with the double whammy burger and the machine because they couldn't do it themselves. Play the Hawaiian music. That's all. How are the little shrimpy poos? She said, Maui Wowie the chef. How are you, little shrimpy poos? I'm not kidding. Did you hear that story or not? Turn it off. They didn't hear anything. What did I know? No, she dropped a tray of food. The whole tray, all the shrimp on the floor with glass. This McClellan was always a lox. And I'm saying it, he was always a no-good Nick. The guy was like hamstrung. He couldn't finish a sentence. He made Bush sound like a Daniel Webster. He was so bad. Now already he's playing himself as a hero. Listen to clip 10. Listen to this stupidity.
I think I expected some of the reaction that was going to come out. The White House would prefer that I not talk openly about my experiences. But I think there's a larger purpose to this book, and that is the message I just talked about. It's really about looking at this permanent campaign culture in Washington, D.C., and talking about...
All right. Right. You were part of it. You as a spokesmouth and liar, okay? So the guy makes about $3 a book, a hardcover book. So what do you think this lox is going to make for being a Frito? What do you think the lox is going to make? Let's say he sells 300,000 copies top. So he makes $1 million before taxes. So the lox comes home with $500,000, and for that he sold his soul. You understand what I'm saying? For $500,000, the guy sold his soul. There's got to be more to it than that. You understand this or not? Why didn't McClellan speak sooner, by the way? Does anyone have an answer to that? So there's always more to it. You're looking at the shadow on the wall. You're not looking at the actors themselves. There's a double image going on here. And I still think that there's a fear that there could be war crimes trials if Obama, the communist front man, wins and his maniacs behind him. How come they never show him smoking? Can any of you left-wing zealots tell me that? Tell me why the media never shows Obama smoking or never shows Al Gore in a carbon-spewing airplane. You lying fools, you. You idiots. You're lucky that you have capitalists like us, or you wouldn't have food to eat. You'd have dirty underwear to eat. That's what you'd be left with. Take a look at Zimbabwe. That's the world you want to live in, you morons, you. Why am I getting worked up? I was away. I didn't get excited over anything. I didn't care. I didn't listen to the news. You know the best part of being away and not watching TV or going on the internet? Everyone in the family had a laptop now, some kind of like, some modernistic glide book. I don't know what do you call it? Book? Silver book? I don't know what it is. They were typing and looking and... Well, they run a business. Okay, I understand that. What do you call those? Does anyone know what... Huh? The book. An iBook. And they could run a business off an iBook. I never saw anything like it under an eve on a beach with a drink and a... the iBooks were flying. And everyone's all day long typing in this into a little... I was amazed at what you can do with the iBook. I don't want one. Why? Because the minute I went near it and they showed me how to work it, I went onto my website and another website and I got agitated. The one blessing was I didn't have to see Wolf Blitzer in a bad suit with that horrendous face of his. Why does he agitate me so much? I get physically nauseous looking at that cretin. He reminds me of kids I knew in Queens, that's why. The goody two-shoes, but is always no good behind the scenes. Always looked like a Boy Scout, but behind it all, he was a Girl Scout. I don't mean it in that sense. Don't get me wrong. And by the way, speaking of that, I heard that McClellan is well-known in certain circles where women are not favored. And I don't know if that's true or not. We have no way to know that. And it really should have no bearing upon the fact that he's a dirty rat. But maybe it does. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. I didn't even mention the website, which is superb. We got the stories up that I'm talking about and then some. Let's go to the callers, Kansas City. Greg, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Michael, I have to tell you about a time I was in Maui, and I had a little confrontation with the locals there.
Please tell us.
We were with some friends, and two locals yelled it across the street to us and said something. We didn't know what they said, and so I said, "What?" Well, apparently, if you say what to a local, you have insulted them.
Well, if you even speak in English, you've insulted them. If you don't grunt in pidgin, you're considered a racist.
Right, and I didn't know what we had done, and then they started the forum. There was two or three, and started getting more guys, and there were about four of us, and we took refuge in a pub. And the next thing we know, there was about 15 of them waiting in the parking lot out front for us, and we had to sneak out the back.
Yes, it's an island. It's an island of low life thugs that the Visitors Bureau hides. And if you get into a fight with any of them and win, the police are their cousins, and the judge, Uncle Roy, went to Berkeley, and you'll wind up in jail, even though you were defending yourself. It's a very, it's a tricky place to be, and you have to understand what's going on there. I was on a beach, a private beach, so to speak, and some local schmuck came by with a pit bull without a chain, and I know that's illegal, and started throwing a stick in the water right where I had to exit the water on purpose. It was a rocky beach with one area of sand. And this SOB kept throwing the stick right at the spot where I had to exit the water. Okay, now I want to tell you something. He was doing it to get me to say what to him, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
I know where they're coming from, Greg. They're lowlifes with nothing in their life. They got nothing to do but hurt people. And their brothers are the cousins, as I say, are the cops. So it's not a very savory place to go if you really know what's going on. Yeah, beauty my eye. They ought to straighten their act out and get some of those people straightened out and put them in jail, build a bigger prison, then make it safe for tourists again. Thanks for the call. Now, we're talking basically about a bigger problem here, which is why McClellan ratted out Bush, even if he's telling the truth. And does anyone remember this guy, what a complete lox he was? And I don't mean Nova. This is not, when I say he's a lox, it's a reference to the fact that he had the brains of a piece of dried salmon. And you could do with him what you wanted, okay? The guy was a mouthpiece, but he couldn't talk. He stumbled over words. I said, how could this guy be a spokesman for anybody? And I figured it out that Bush used him to make himself sound more literate. But now the most illiterate of the bunch turns out to be the biggest rat. Can you figure that one out? Why is he doing this? Tell me why. Now, before we go away from this hour, for your listening education, I'm going to play for you the sound of the leprechaun, Nancy Graceless, and the other vermin in the media, in my opinion, who sicked the state of Texas and all of America against the poor Mormons and had their children taken away. I want you to hear what they said about them. I'm never going to stop playing this until justice is served, until papers are served on these newscasters, so to speak, for having made up stories about sexual slavery, rape, child abuse. I will not rest until justice is done. And it's not because I have anything against them. I have no malice whatsoever to any of them. I don't want to see anybody else's church, synagogue, or mosque raided by any state of the union because of vermin rats in the media who are trying to sell listenership.
Savage. just don't listen to what the court orders, and they don't care about reuniting these children, and they are traumatizing these children. The abuse that these children are suffering at the hands of CPS is orders of magnitude beyond any abuse that they might suffer in the hands of their parents, based on, particularly on the theory that the state's advancing in this case.
Now, that's a spokesman for the children and the parents whose children were illegally stolen from them by the mean-faced, clipped-haired women in the Child Protective Services, so to speak, as egged on by the rats in the media who did it strictly for ratings without any thought whatsoever for the care of the children. And so that you don't forget who said what when, I'm going to play for you what was said by whom when right now, and you'll see why there was a stampede to remove these children. You're going to listen to people who are as culpable as the Child Protective Services people were in snatching those children, illegally, mind you, from the Mormon parents. Listen to this.
New details coming from a newly unsealed search warrant.
They have girls, young girls.
Acts of abuse took place.
She was abused.
Underage girls.
Horrifying new details.
Sexual abuse.
A bed.
They can assume that that's a crime.
A sex bed inside the temple.
Some girls don't even know who their parents are.
Pregnant.
Having sex.
Naturally, that would be a form of abuse.
Sexual abuse.
Consummating that marriage in the bed.
Statutory rape.
13 or 14.
Acts of abuse.
It was abused.
Sexual abuse.
A sex bed.
Abuse.
Sex.
Sexual abuse.
Sex.
Abuse.
Sex.
Where do the kids go? A sexual slavery situation. That's what this is.
Really, Bill, a sexual slavery thing. That's what this is, Mr. High and Mighty Conservative Family Values. Well, apparently it was not a sexual slavery type of thing. It was a projection that you were laying upon them in the opinion of anyone who took Psych 101. Now, the Texas Supreme Court ruled an hour ago that I'm right and everyone else in the media is not only wrong, but liable for what they did to these poor people. I'm the only one right on this. Jeff in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Doc Savage, I just wanted to echo your sentiments. I couldn't agree with you more. You were the only one that day, and I'll be honest with you, when you were the one that stepped out there and said, you know what, this smells like a dead fish to me, I was like, oh, my God, I think my doc just stepped in it. But here you are today on Vindication Day, so I'm glad.
Well, thank you. That's correct. A lot of people called me and said, oh, no, they were being abused. You're wrong. I said, you're missing the law here, and you're missing the bigger picture here, which is the constitutionality or lack thereof of what the state did to these churchgoers. Doesn't matter whether you like them or approve of them. What matters is they didn't commit a crime.
Yeah, I have a question for you, too. Doc, have you heard anything from the ACLU on this? They were noticeably silent when this whole...
Yeah, well, no, because this was a church which, as you well know, they're the anti-Christian Liberty Union, so therefore they would not take their side, just as the ACLU is not only not taking my side in my battle against the Muslim group that's trying to throw me off the air, but in fact they're probably secretly advising the opposition to kill free speech, because they are rats. Make no mistake about who the ACLU is. The ACLU is the enemy of America. They are diehard revolutionary socialists. And perverted on top of it all. But I don't get me started. It's my first 2.5 hours back from vacation. I don't even want to get angry. Play the Hawaiian music. Maybe it'll calm me down for a second because I almost got excited. The dog's asleep. Talking with Teddy here instead of Travels with Charlie. Talking with Teddy. Not bad. He likes listening to the show. He didn't want to go to work today. He wanted to stay here with me. Wanted to stay on the couch. He knows tonight after... All right, they got the picture ready with that rotten music. He knows what's coming tonight. After a trip, I don't want to eat out now for a week, so I'll cook at home. And he knows when I cook at home, he eats like a Roman emperor. Whatever I eat, he gets. If I make a potato, he gets the potato. If I make a chicken, he gets the chicken. If I make a bean, he gets the bean. I try to give him more of the beans than the flesh because they got the chips they eat today. Had my first dog had chips, he'd be alive probably another 10 years, but they ate garbage in those days, the dogs of my day. They fed him kennel ration. I have nothing against the product. I think it was ground up horse hooves or something, and it was nothing. You never gave him a grain or a vegetable. In fact, I once tried to feed that dog a vegetable. My father yelled at me, don't give him a vegetable. They don't eat it. What do you mean they don't eat it? We eat it. We're not dogs. They're made for meat, only meat. Don't you dare give him a carrot. Well, they like it. No, don't give him. You'll poison him. He doesn't have the stomach for it. God, the things they didn't know in those days. But I try to slip him a vegetable now and again to keep him. I figured he liked it. A horse eats a carrot. Why couldn't a dog eat a carrot, I figured, or a green bean from the plate that I didn't want? No, only the meat. The meat. The meat he likes. The meat. To give him heavy, fatty, or leftovers, what I leave over, the greasy stuff that even I won't eat, that with the bone give him. 9 years old, dead, a heart attack. Even then, the hard dog even had a heart attack from the kitchen food. I told you, stiff on the rug in Queens. Terrible moment. My mother was crying. We came, well, because 9 years, you know, an animal. It's not an animal after a while. It's like a retarded child in the house. You come to love it no matter what. Animals are like retarded children. I'm not knocking him. I happen to have had a brother who was sick, and I love him dearly. I would have killed for him, and I wouldn't let anyone hurt him. So don't tell me I'm insensitive. It's usually you rats who never even lived through it who are the most insensitive pigs. But you're quick on the internet like a lynching mob. That's all you do. You losers in your undershirts. You bloggers. What you do is sit there like a lynch mob. You're all brave with your keypads. Everyone's no good but you. So after 9 years, even if he was a little vicious and bit me through to the bone, you come down and you see the creature stiff on the rug, on a green rug, unmoving, and my mother's crying. What happened? What happened? I don't know. He's dead. He's dead. What do you mean he's dead? Look, look. And she touched his legs. He must have been dead hours because he was already rigid on the rug. All right, Ma, get away. Get away, Ma. Let me see. And you touch. You touch not directly because you're afraid he could be like in a fit and snapped and rip your throat out because he was a vicious dog. You figured maybe he was like knocked out. He had an epileptic attack, whatever. So you don't right away touch the whole body because it could spring into action and kill you. You touch the foot like from a distance with your hand. So if he snaps, you only lose a hand. Not like your entire life. I'm just playing with it. No, you did. You touched the foot and it was rigid. It had the feeling when you touch the foot of the dead dog on the pad of the foot, it had the equivalent feeling of like a broom, like a small broom laying there. So what are you going to do? So she called it. The ultimate authority had to be called, yet he was still asleep. It was not yet time to go to work. And he gave the edict like Caesar. All right, it's finished. It's over. Fought the boom. Called the garbage men. What? That's what they did? There was no pet cemeteries with weeping and crying and cremation and jars that people have. I'm soft-headed, too. I got a jar with the last dog with his picture. The whole thing changes. You go along with it or you wind up crazy altogether. So now I have a box with the dog's ashes in it. I'm sure the ashes in there are not for my dog. I can guarantee you they gave it from a leaf they burned somewhere. Those crooks in those crematoria. Like they give it your dog's ashes. Oh, yeah, here's your dog's ashes, sure. They didn't burn a leaf. They probably got it from the park, from a drunk parkie that set the leaves on fire when he fell over in an alcoholic stupor with a cigarette. And they went, they told the kid, the half-wit from the neighborhood who worked in the crematorium, go get the ashes from the park, from the parkie, roll them out of the leaves, the bum there, and get the leaves, bring them in. You're going to set them out in various dishes, the leaves, the burnt leaves, and I've got 100 dishes for you to do, dummy. 100? 100? Yeah, today by noon, dummy. Go get the leaves and bring them and stuff them. And then each one you put the label on. Here lies Teddy, the dog that he loved so dear. Inside is a burnt leaf. But in those days, as I say, the garbage men came, and they wore in those days, the garbage men in New York, the sanitation department they call it today, the garbage men, they wore brown suits that were made of a certain fabric that was so hostile. What would you wear if you were in a garbage truck every day? Today they look like Apaches coming off the truck with tomahawks. In those days, even the garbage men wore a uniform. Well, albeit it wasn't great, it wasn't designed by DaVinci, but I mean by Boss. It wasn't a Boss suit. Boss worked only for Hitler. They made a nice suit for the Nazis. I think they were Boss designs, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, no, yeah, the one with the big shoulders. They did beautiful uniforms in the 30s. Oh, you could die from them. Gorgeous. But today, they don't wear a uniform. Headbands, bandanas, tomahawks in the back of the garbage truck, speaking languages with tattoos coming off their tongues. You know, it's a different world. But at least today they don't throw a dog in a garbage truck. That's the thing I'm trying to get at. Who would do that today? Nobody. That would be dog abuse. I watch that show at night, like Miami Pet Police. They're like saints to me, people in that business. You know, they usually go into like neighbors, like poverty neighborhoods where they abuse animals like it's part of their culture. They always say they don't know whose dog it was. He ran in. I have no idea. The dog is kept with like welts and the fur ripped off. Barbed wire around his neck, and the guy comes in, they get him, they figure he's coming back from a an episode holding up a 7-Eleven. And they say to him, hey, Jack, is this your dog? No, he just came in here. I ran, jumped the fence. What dog? Oh, no. Never saw him before. Look, Jack, he's got a cut. No, I don't know whose dog. Must be my neighbor's dog. You getting hostile with me? You getting hostile with me? But the guys have a lot of guts in that business with the guns. They take him in. I really admire them today. But you wouldn't, even a guy like that wouldn't throw a dog into a garbage truck. What do they do with him, a guy like that, if one of the dogs finally dies that they used for a pit bull practice? Do they bury them? I don't even know. Do they cook them? What do they do with them? Where do they send them? I don't know. How do they deal with it like a dog they snatch from you after your yard and throw into a pit bull ring somewhere in St. Louis? And when they're through with it, do they bury it or? I really don't know the ins and outs of all of this. I'll be right back.
Not only si se puedes, si logramos, we will.
Vaya, vaya, Hillary. Hillary the butter churner. The only audience in America that none of the politicians care to speak to, the Savage Nation. Third largest show in the country, 10 million people a week, but none of them know you exist, nor do they want your vote. Instead, they want the illegal aliens vote. They want the transsexuals from San Francisco to vote for them. They want welfare recipients to vote for them. Anyone but you, anyone but the hardcore listenership of this show is welcome to vote in the election that's coming up. It's fabulous to see. So where does McCain stand on gay marriage? Let's see. It says, McCain disagrees with Obama and Clinton on defense of marriage. McCain disagrees with Obama and Clinton. Well, I'm not so sure he disagrees. He did appear on Ellen DeGeneres' show last week, before I went on vacation. And McCain was on DeGeneres' show. And he said, I believe that heterosexual marriage is unique. He said, I just believe in the unique status of marriage between a man and a woman. I know that we have a respectful disagreement on that issue. Oh, how touching. How respectful can you get, John? It seems you respect everyone except the base that could get you elected. That's very interesting. But that's irrelevant. I really don't care who he respects or disrespects. What I care about is why should anyone vote for Bush 3? Well, it may turn out that Bush 3 might be a better choice than Marx 2, you know. That could be the reason. KNEW, Dave, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good to hear you're back, Uncle Mako. I'm sorry you had
You call me Uncle Mako like I'm a shark, but okay, I got it. It's okay. Do what you want.
Yeah, that's the closest thing I come up with, Michael. Mako. Don't make
that's funny.
The waters of Hawaii.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's good to hear you're back. I'm sorry about Hawaii. That's I've heard about
that. No, look, don't get me wrong. Overall, everyone had a good time except me. So don't take my word for it. They loved it.
Yeah, it's just too bad that whole thing is going on in Hawaii right now.
No, but I'm not a vacation kind of guy. I can't. Not that they're unintelligent. Some of them are much smarter than me. I just don't like vacations.
Yeah, well, you know, anyway, I call them.
Maybe it's too late in life, you know, for me. I had vacations galore. To me, a vacation is talking on the radio. That's a vacation. Otherwise, you can go crazy. It's like being in stir. I can go stir crazy waiting for the radio to come on. But what's on your mind tonight, Dave?
Well, I called about the book. I was thinking about it, and I think it simply came to me.
Oh, McClellan, Frito, okay. What do you think about it?
I think simply that the left-wing media, the whole Hillary would call it a left-wing conspiracy, made a deal with McClellan, and they said...
All right, let's follow this out. I'm sure it's been talked about. I haven't heard it because I haven't been listening to radio or reading. How does this work? Let me see how this theory goes. McClellan writes a book slamming Bush, saying that the liberals are right all along. And as a result, everyone says, aha, Bush was a liar, and therefore I'm going to vote for Obama?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you the ending, and it just proves that I'm right. I think McClellan has already called Bush and said, don't worry about it. I just took the money, and I think Bush laughed. I think the guy got like $5 million to do this book.
Oh, that's the kind of advance they gave this Lox?
I think he got $2 million advance and plus everything else.
That's amazing. Well, that's a big number. I mean, I've written books. I don't know. The advances like that are only paid to people whose books aren't going to sell. And they're done for political reasons. That's true. Generally, books with advances over $1 million, $2 million don't sell. And they're done for political reasons by the publishing companies. By and large, that's true in the nonfiction area. I don't know. I can't speculate on it. I think the guy is a loser. He has been from day one. And there's got to be more to it than just ratting Bush out. You're dealing with a dynasty here. The Bush dynasty is nothing to tamper with. Now, you can criticize him all you want. We live in a free country. They're not going to, you know, do anything to a guy who doesn't like him. But when you come from a Texas political family, as McClellan does, and you're in essence one of the inner circle, otherwise why would they hire this moron? Why would they have ever hired this moron to begin with? Because he's so literate and so good looking, because he's such a wonderful personality. They hired this idiot because he was from a Texas family. They thought they could trust him. Right? Okay, that's how it operates. That's how it works. Hire the dumb son. Well, but he can't talk. No, Scotty's come a long way since we gave him speech therapy. You'll see. No, but he was always the dumb kid in the crowd that they put the donkey's tail on him and can't hire him. No. Scotty's had speech therapy now for 12 years. He'll be good to work for your son. Are you sure? Let's listen to him. They listen to him. They figure he's so dumb he makes Bush sound good. Let's try him. So the only reason they hired him is for loyalty. So you're going to rat out a family like that. You're going to do this to the Bush family. It's a dynasty you're dealing with. As I say, you know, this is family to family now down there. This is not good for this kid. If he thinks he's going to get away with this scot-free, I don't know. I just don't know. Something's wrong with the picture. Now, you could set it up in 100 different ways and say Bush is behind it, that he wanted McClellan to write it. I can't get into this. I was away 5 days. My mind was clear for a minute. Let me put it to you this way. Let me explain it to you this way. You're going to get excited over this jerk's book? Get excited over it if you want. If you're sitting day after day staring at Molokai, even in the shade and even through air conditioning most of the time, and all you got to look at is Molokai, day and night Molokai, and you say to yourself, now that rock, these are new islands. There's a late volcanic eruption. They're relatively new. They came up out of the sea. The humans and this, the Ritz-Carlton, next thing, Ono and Yahi and movies and cars. But it's a late evolution of an earth form. And you're sitting there staring at Molokai and you say to yourself, okay, that's been there for millions of years out of the water. And look what's on it. Look how great that is. And I said, millions of years from now, it'll still be there in the water. And nobody will remember Obama. Never mind, millions of years from now. No one's going to remember McClellan 2 minutes from now. It's unbelievable to me. You got to get that eternal. So maybe it was good for me to get away and listen to water all night. I got to tell you something. You hear that surf all night, you sleep like a baby. I know that. I got to live on the ocean somewhere, not there, but I got to get an ocean front something. All night long, whoosh, whoosh, boom, 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 boom. Now, overly pounding is not good. I once ran into an old rich Jewish guy in Boca Raton with a cigar walking his dog. And he had moved to a condominium, an expensive condominium. Good, nice dressed. He looked like De Niro's outfits in the casino. You know the type that he won't even go out to walk his dog, even though he's retired and he could go pig, Slobberville. But the guy dressed just to walk his little dog, right? That kind of guy. In other words, he was a classy guy. I was talking to him on a walkway once near a hotel. He said, I had a house on the ocean. I was asking him what he thought of it. You know what he said to me? Puff, puff. He said, you've seen one wave, you've seen them all. So there's another way to look at it. So I'm not so sure that's the answer, but you sleep better. If you go to sleep 11 o'clock, you wake up at 5, 5:15, boom, clean. I had no dreams. I had no agitated dreams there. Here after radio, agitated like a firestorm in my head every night. Electrical storm.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I think I expected some of the reaction that was going to come out. The White House would prefer that I not talk openly about my experiences. But I think there's a larger purpose to this book, and that is the message I just talked about. It's really about looking at this permanent campaign culture in Washington, D.C., and talking about how can we move beyond it.
There's a plane waiting for us to take us to Miami in an hour, all right? Don't make a big thing about it. I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
Leave the gun.
Take the cannoli.
Oh, my God, the kaleidoscopic mind of Michael Savage. Now, why am I playing the Godfather with the cannoli, the gun, and the freedom, and with McClellan and Bush? I'll let you figure it out. Something's wrong with this picture. Why is everyone drilling Bush all of a sudden? Well, we know he made a lot of mistakes. We know he lied. Okay. That's the first president in history who did it. Admittedly, it was a pretty big lie and a long time now, 5 years for the contractors didn't make enough money yet in the oil companies. Admittedly, the profits have never been better and they won't stop. And the reason the Democrats won't stop is because finally the Republicans got smart and they let them share in it. That's all. How many times do I have to tell you not to worry that much about the Democrats? Let me explain why. At the end of the day, they're the same party. First of all, Nancy Pelosi, God bless her, is one of the richest women in the country. Why? Because they're smart. They're politically connected. Her and her husband are good business people. Now, they want to pay more taxes. They want to pay 90% of their income in taxes so that the third world can come eat them for breakfast. Schmuck, open your eyes. Al Gore wants to pay more in taxes. Hillary Clinton and Bill want to pay more taxes. Are you idiotic? The reason that they give the rhetoric out is to confuse the moron bloggers who sit in dirty underwear and think that there's going to be a revolution if a Democrat wins. Now, before the Democrats re-got power, they said, when we win, when we get the majority, we're going to end the war, end the war. And that's all Nancy Pelosi said. Then, slowly, they let the idiots down. We're going to end the war. When? 90 days from now, we're going to end the war. 90 days ago. How come the war hasn't ended? We're working on it, but that Bush is so intractable. We're going to... You notice Harry Reid's all of a sudden you don't hear from Harry Reid anymore? Remember he was like a bête noir for a year? That's all that the golfer would talk about is Harry Reid. I said, Harry Reid's probably a nice guy. What do you talk? The guy's not stupid. You go to a boxing match, he's there with people who know him, understand money. What do you think, he's a revolutionary? They don't understand anything, these people. I understand everything. At least I think I do. They think they do and they don't. I think I do and I probably do. So what I'm telling you is the Democrats come to power. They tell you they're going to end the war. End the war. And all of a sudden, the left-wing bloggers, the unwashed morons who went to college for 2 minutes. Hey, end the war. Bring the troops home now. Code pink. Code stinko. Code pinka. And all of a sudden, it's years now that Nancy Pelosi's been the Speaker of the House. Nothing's changed. Why? Because the Republicans said, all right, you're right, we've been raping the public, and you didn't get very much out of it. Only the shopping cart guy did. He was smart enough to get in on it early. You know, he's no dummy, that guy. I mean, the shopping cart franchise alone at the airports. So they get all of a sudden, the billions flow to them now. Now they got to flow into them. So the Democrats are now sharing. All of a sudden, you don't hear any anti-war rhetoric. Don't worry, we can't end it. Those Republican SOBs won't end it. We've tried, but Bush is too tough. He's militant like a Texas Ranger. So what you got to do is elect us now to the presidency. When we're elected, we'll win that war in 30 seconds. The minute we're elected, it'll be so fast, you won't even see a Humvee left in Iraq when we get through. J.O.C., you go to the polls, you schmucks, and put in a Democrat. And all that'll happen is instead of it being, let's say, I would guess 65-35 now, raping off the public's money in Iraq and Afghanistan. Figure the Republicans kept 65 and gave them 35. Now it'll reverse. Say after the Democrats win, the Republicans get 35, so they don't throw them out of office too fast. And the Democrats will take a 65-er. So it'll never come to an end. Get used to the war. Enjoy it. You may as well learn to live with it. Because as Aristotle Onassis said, if you're going to get raped, you may as well enjoy it. And he said that because he was raped as a young man by the Muslims who took over Greece. Of course they did that. Oh, sacred thing. But when they invaded the Greek villages, they burnt the churches down with everyone in them and raped the boys. And then made them go to work for them. Gloria, Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Regarding the McClellan book, I heard today that the publisher is someone by the name of Peter Olnos, or Olmos, and that his company is financed by George Soros. Maybe you could check into that.
Oh, yeah. George Soros, in my opinion, is public enemy number one to the American way of life. But if we had a legitimate government, the man's passport would be seized, and he'd be arrested by U.S. Marshals for being a registered foreign agent, in my opinion. The guy is after me. He funds a homosexual radical group that is mimicking the brown shirts of Hitler called Media Matters, who goes after anyone who dares stand up to this rat bum from Bulgaria. Even though he's not from Bulgaria, he may as well eat Bulgar wheat. Thanks for the call. I wouldn't be shocked. Tampa, Florida. Chris, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I know that McClellan is certainly a rat, and you know, he's not the first one, whether he's been paid or from the.
All right, you're breaking up. That's all. Next time, get an American cell phone and actually get a Chinese cell phone. The American phones don't work. We don't even make them anymore. All right, so big deal. What's the revelation in the book that you didn't know? What's the big deal over this schmuck's book? What, that they lied to you? What government hasn't lied? Can you name one government in modern history that didn't lie to the stupid people and need to be lied to because they're as stupid as children? Tell me, what government doesn't lie to the people? Which recent American government did not lie to the people? What revelation occurred in this schmuck's book that is so exciting that you need to talk about it? I'm only talking about it because you're talking. You want to hear about it. Because I didn't even listen to radio, so I figured Galfa did it. This is natural for the wall banger, you know, the Nagy shows. Three colors, Maxim, red, green, and blue. The canvas has three spots on it for paint. Pick a big side of gray, red, green, blue. That's it. That's the picture. So I have to do it. I have to slow it down to three colors. But I'll do that, okay? Now, I did a very good piece earlier. I did an interview on John Hagee and John McCain, interviewed by Joel Mowbray of National Review. And I think you should listen to the interview, frankly. And if you don't want to listen to it, you're going to miss a good one. But I'm going to play it anyway because I did it. It's in the can, and it's a good piece. I know you only want to talk about McClellan. This is going to go on now for days because I can guarantee you Galfa, Wallbanger, Leprechaun, blah, 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 McClellan no good. He's a little dirty rat. So that's what you want to hear. It's the buzz, the Cracker Barrel buzz. We can do it. If that's what the Cracker wants, we'll do the Cracker Barrel buzz. But right now we're going to talk about Hagee and McCain and that whole thing, and then we'll be back. Be here.
Savage.
Everyone has heard the amazingly horrific comments made by Barack Obama's longtime mentor and church minister, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. We've been wondering how Obama would spin and deny his way out of this mess. Well, guess what? Some in the media are now trying to make it a connection between John McCain and an evangelical minister named John Hagee and some controversial statements that Hagee has said. Joel Mowbray has been looking into this absurd attempt and joined us now to talk about it. Joel Mowbray, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, great to be here. Thank you.
Well, give the people a little background. I know John Hagee, and he's a wonderful man.
Reverend John Hagee is a very high-profile evangelical Christian minister who is based in San Antonio, and he founded a group in the last couple of years called Christians United for Israel, which last year, I believe, had 6,000 evangelicals from around the country and brought them into Washington to lobby Congress on behalf of Israel.
Why are people making the comparisons from Obama and Wright to McCain and Hagee?
You know, it's ironic that Barack Obama refers to the presidential politics as silly season, because it's exactly what's happening now in Obama's defense, that the media just is obsessing with how they can get Barack Obama into the White House. Michael, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, we talk a lot about bias in the media and even, you know, left-leaning bias. Typically, they try, I mean, they really do give it a college try to avoid it. It's just their biases are so deep-seated they can't help it. Here, these guys are overt in their bias in favor of Obama. And nowhere is this more clear than with their trying to marginalize the significance of Reverend Jeremiah Wright and Barack Obama. Here's a guy who baptized the man's children, who married Barack and Michelle, who was the closest adult relationship he had outside of his wife. It was an intimate relationship, and now they're trying to, in the media, say, oh, it's no different than John McCain with John Hagee. Now, all McCain did was go to San Antonio, ask Hagee for his support, for his endorsement. He got it, and that was it. That's the extent of the relationship. Now, as far as the comparisons between Hagee and Wright, forget about the comparisons between the relationships, between Hagee and Wright, my God, Michael, you had in Reverend Jeremiah Wright, a man who said on September 16, 2001, that the U.S. deserved the 9/11 attacks because of, among many reasons, its support for terrorism against the Palestinians. He thinks that the government created AIDS to kill black people. That's not the slightest bit conspiratorial or just loony, right? Well, how about John Hagee? What does John Hagee do? He talks about the Bible and what's in the Bible.
True.
And what he didn't say, that everyone in the media thinks he said, was that he said that the Catholic Church was the great whore of Babylon and that it was a false cult system. Well, in fact, what this was, and Frank Rich in the New York Times was probably the worst person on this in a recent column. What actually happened was he said that this great whore of Babylon, which is a scary-sounding term, what's in the Bible? It's the Bible's term, not John Hagee's. And anyway, Hagee's point is that this great whore is the apostate church. The apostate, you know, you leave something, you leave the church, the Christian church. He didn't say it was the Catholic Church, never once. Didn't say it in the YouTube video, didn't say it anywhere else. What he said was that anyone who turns their back on the Gospels, who turns their back on the Christian faith, will be part of this apostate church, this great whore of Revelation. Now, you know what's very interesting, Michael? You know what he was actually doing in that YouTube video? He was fighting anti-Semitism. Because to him, one of the surest ways you can turn your back on the Christian faith and join this apostate church, which is represented by the great whore of Revelation, is to commit anti-Semitism. He is a passionate, passionate fighter of anti-Semitism, particularly Christian anti-Semitism. And so what he does is he reminds Christians at every turn of the history of Christian anti-Semitism, which is not a proud one, and it is a long one. And you know what? For three-quarters of the entire history of Christendom, Michael, it was only the Catholic Church, the only game in town. So if you're talking about historical past deeds of Christians against Jews, well, guess what? Most of them were committed by Catholics. And that's it. I mean, so this is the core of the issue here. John Hagee did not say that the Catholic Church was the apostate church or the great whore of Revelation. And now the media is twisting this and trying to equate it to what Reverend Wright said and make the claim that somehow McCain's very slim relationship with Hagee, and this is just an endorsement, that's all it was, is the same as Obama. So it's distortion upon distortion in order to create this link.
Well, surely it couldn't have taken much to research the actual facts here. Why isn't there a lot of people speaking up?
Michael, you know, the media is plagued by a few things. Chief among them, laziness and stupidity. It is amazing. I will leave anonymous the name of the journalist. But there was a journalist I know, a lefty, but a journalist who's actually pretty decent and factual, who wrote recently that John Hagee, just as a matter of fact, what they call the nut graph in the story, that Hagee had called the Catholic Church the great whore. And I emailed the guy. I said, look, man, you know, I've done my homework on this. I've done the research. He never said it, not once. And this person said, oh, sorry about that. I just took it as true because I had seen it in so many stories. And this was a serious reporter. And now he changed it. He corrected it to his credit. But, you know, you have these self-evident truths in the media that once it kind of comes out there. Do you remember back in 1992, just to pull up an historical chestnut, the worst recession since the end of World War II? You remember that line from Bill Clinton running against George H.W. Bush?
Don't get me started.
We had the bare minimum definition of a recession, two quarters in a row of zero growth. And it was like one quarter zero growth, one quarter slightly negative growth. I mean, not even close to the late 70s or huge parts of the late 60s with the Johnson Great Society. And Clinton got away with calling it the worst recession since the end of World War II because the media just took it as true. Or right now, there were no recession. Michael, we haven't had one quarter of zero growth, let alone two, which is the definition of a recession. So we start tossing these terms around, even though we have set definitions, especially for a recession. It hasn't been met. But the media wants to call it a recession because they don't like Bush, and they think that anything he touches turns to crap. And so, therefore, we must be in a recession because Bush is the president. I guarantee you, if you had this economic record with a Democratic president, we'd maybe be called a slow economy or a teetering economy, but not a bad one, and certainly not a recession. So, and why do I say all this with respect to the Hagee stuff? Because the media wants something to be so, and so they make it so. And you know, they're lazy, so they're not going to check it. So even the people who don't intentionally lie will just take something as a self-evident truth, like my friend, who's actually a halfway decent journalist. More than that, he's pretty good. But the problem is he just got sucked into that, and it happens so often. And the problem is the Internet makes it easier than ever to fact-check, but it also makes it easier than ever to spread misinformation, and that's exactly what's happening here.
Savage.
All right, stop the presses, stop the noise for a minute. This just came out on Little Green Footballs, and we linked it up on michaelsavage.com. Soros connected to McClellan book. We're going to talk about that right now to the end of the show, and it's a very important story because there should be Senate hearings immediately. But the Republicans, as you all know, have ceased to function as a party for a while now. There is no Republican Party. There's no there. There's nothing there. If there was something there, they'd be demanding, they'd be screaming, they'd be on television, but they're not there. But you're going to be there, and you're going to find out why this locks, this non-Nova locks named Scott McClellan, published this book. The connection is to, in my opinion, public enemy number one, George Soros. Now, I call him public enemy number one because he is the enemy of the American way. He is a man who's made billions of dollars, primarily by trading in currencies and in things of that nature, yet he hates capitalism. Because capitalism respects individuals. He doesn't respect individuals, so far as I can tell. He only respects power. And he wants we, the little people, to have neither capital nor power. In other words, he's a classic naked Marxist. Many of you don't understand that you can be a billionaire and a Marxist at the same time. You still think that communists really care about the people. But let's put that aside. The headline is Soros connected to McClellan book. The McClellan book is the story of the week. The McClellan book is going to be the story of the next week. McClellan is that inarticulate slob who worked for George Bush as a so-called spokesman when he couldn't even speak himself. Hemmed and hawed and this and that. Now he says that Bush is no good. He lied. He did this. He was at war. He was a public relations stunt. And the libs are jumping all over it, naturally, because they want to confirm what they have said for years as truth. So it comes out an hour ago. The Soros-McClellan connection on Little Green Football is an excellent blog, and I want to read it to you. The company that published Scott McClellan's new Bush-bashing book is Public Affairs Books, and their editor-at-large is a guy named Peter Osnos. The owner of Public Affairs Books is a company called Perseus Book Group. Here's the ownership tree. The firm is owned by Perseus Funds Group, holding company Perseus LLC, a capital management firm that grew from about $20 million in 1995 to over $2 billion now. Big infusions of cash seemed to help it grow exponentially, and it closed funds almost as fast as it opened them. The board has tons of liberals from the Clinton and Carter administrations with far-left credentials that almost put Osnos to shame. Their website is here, and you link to it. And you find out that if you look at it, there's a connection between Perseus and Soros Biopharmaceutical Fund LP. Teddy, shut up. You're interrupting a radio show that's important. Cut it out. No amount of dog on your territory can be more important than this. So stop it. You're interrupting an important broadcast. So there it is. Perseus publishes the book. Soros is connected. Boom, end of story. Let's move on. .me. Now, do you want to talk about it? 1-800-449-8255. Because as sure as I'm sitting here, this is all that the golfer and the wall banger and the leppy are going to talk tomorrow. Because this is made for them. I mean, this is made. This is made for them. Made in the U.S. of A. And we have to talk about it. So would you like to? Any comments? Any this? Any that? Or you haven't heard yet the comments, so you can't comment. See, that's how talk radio works, is that unless you've actually heard it talked about on a previous show, you actually can't say anything. But if you've heard it talked about and you could copy what other people have said, then you already have the phone number, ding, zing, and calling. And Mike, I think this, and Mike, I think, and I, because I heard it, even though I didn't make believe I didn't hear it, I made it up. It just sounds. So no one knows what to say because it's too new. So I'll tell you what it means. What it means is simple. It means that Soros put up the money for the book to smash Bush. And McClellan is a bigger backstabber than you thought. He's a total and absolute Frito. Actually, play the piece with the cannolis again so they understand what I'm talking about.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Okay. So it lends credence, so-called, to left-wing radical talking points. And the midstream media is going to say it's the gospel truth. It's going to be talked about and talked about and walked about and talked about and walked about and talked about. So there it is. And, of course, the leprechaun's glad to jump on this because he can cover up the fact that he was one of the people who sicked the state of Texas and the American people on the poor Mormons. That's what the leprechaun specializes in. But I understand that. What else is there to say about this? McClellan is a backstabber. He is what he is. How he can get away with it, I don't know. So, what else can you say? There's nothing to say. Soros is a public enemy number one, in my opinion. But why get excited over this worm? This worm was nothing then. The worm is nothing now. McClellan was a worthless worm then, and that's the end of it. It doesn't matter whether you believe that Bush did wrong. Can't you understand this? That here's a guy who worked for Bush and now stabs him in the back. Don't you understand what character means? Don't you understand what this means, why I've been playing these important sound bites from The Godfather for you today? I've lost track of what I'm playing already. I was on vacation. I really wanted to talk about another story, but I haven't gotten to it because many of you are afraid to talk about it. Germany unveils memorial to gay victims of Holocaust. What you don't know, though, is that although there were gay victims of the Holocaust, there was the brown shirts, the SA, that was Hitler's murder, Hitler's street murderers, and they were all run by mad gays, insane killers, and they were all gay. Ernst Röhm and many other leaders of the SA were homosexuals, but this is not allowed to be talked about in the media because all gays are victims, all gays are good, all gays are gentle. Gays cannot be authoritarian fascists. Now can they be? And so you have simple discussion points in America, such as Bush bad, Obama a saint. Obama's Mr. Green, Mr. Clean, Mr. Dream, and consequently the psychotics can't wait for the revolution to occur in America under Mr. Green, Clean, Mean. How come they don't show Obama smoking when he's known to be a chain smoker? Can anyone explain that to me? Answer. Same reason they don't show Al Gore in his private jet. Because that would show his carbon footprint is bigger than Bigfoot after eating berries he couldn't digest. I mean, Bigfoot's foot gets bigger after eating berries he can't digest because he's running to find a latrine. And that's why you don't see any pictures of Al Gore in a carbon footprint jet. Because even though I've been on planes that they were on previously to me being on them and the flight attendant said, you know who was just on this plane? Hillary Clinton. I said, how could that be? Doesn't she have a low carbon footprint? Ha, 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 goes the laugh. I was once on a plane from Las Vegas to here that would have been chartered by the Gore team. They said Al Gore was just on the same plane as you. I said, how could that be? I thought he has a low carbon footprint. They said, well, we don't know anything about footprints. We only know that they pay $7,000 an hour to charter it. That's all. Wisconsin Bob, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, how are you?
What's on your mind?
Well, I think you have half of the McClellan equation correct in that you stated he couldn't put two words together while he was a press secretary.
Right.
He fumbled for ideas.
Right.
And I just got back from Iraq where I was trained to notice obvious and slight differences in the terrain and road surfaces, of course, to avoid IEDs. And the big thing is now when Mr. McClellan is on the news, he comes across as articulate as Lincoln giving the Gettysburg Address.
Okay, so you're asking how did he become articulate? Did he take speech pathology lessons or what?
I guess in 5 days, he went from a dunce to a brilliant, articulate speaker. And
But Bob, maybe Soros has a special speech training institute somewhere in Hungary where he puts people who are dummies in and they come out smart.
My personal view of George Soros is he is a man without a country.
That's correct. He's a man without a country who is a public enemy. In my opinion, his passport should be seized and he should be arrested and his assets seized. That's if we had a – there should be Senate hearings right now on the Soros connection to the McClellan book. We got to get to the bottom of this connection. Don't you agree with that, Bob?
Yes, I agree with that totally. And
well, let's go back to your main point. You're a man who's trained to observe things in order to avoid you're not getting killed and the men in your platoon or whatever you were doing over there not getting killed. What do you make of the whole McClellan story?
Well, obviously, it was planned. I mean, you don't write a book overnight.
But let's play out the chess game. The radical left-wing foamers have a book that says everything they've said about Bush is correct. So how does that help them?
Well, of course, it's theoretically supposed to help the Obama campaign. But there's a pitfall in liberalism, and they end up doing in themselves because nobody likes a liar, and in the end, they're always proven to be liars. So,
you mean once it's shown that McClellan was bought by Soros's money through the publisher, and it's egg on their face, you think it'll backfire on them?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, but they own the media; they're all the same. Liberalism is a mental disorder, and I know it's a fatal mental disorder that we understand, but. I don't know how this is going to play out myself. I don't think the media is going to play up the Soros connection to the McClellan book. You know they won't. You think Katie Coran Corrick is going to do that? Never. Gary, WOR, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Thank you for welcoming me to the Savage Nation. You know, this is huge. I mean, this Soros thing. I mean, this sheds a whole new light on it. When I called, I was about to say that, you know, I'm glad that you didn't take it so seriously because I didn't. I can't watch any of the news media. I watch it for 1 second, you know, through the eyes of somebody who thinks that these people are filthy, stinking rats, you know, just like you taught us to say, and that's the way I look at the world. And I can't listen to any other radio station but yours, you know what I mean?
And but I've got you where I want you. But I'm telling you the way I see it. I'm not telling you how to see it yourself. I'm a cynic. I mean, I don't believe a word any of them say.
You know, something or other, you know? That's the way my...
Yeah.
Those were the very words that my mother used. And until I heard you, she died a long time...
What word? Wait, well, what words did she use?
Huh? Filthy.
What word?
Filthy.
About who?
Everything was filthy. You know, she never called anybody filthy. She always said to me, don't ever say anything bad about the Jews. You know, we grew up in an Italian household, you know?
It's going to turn into an anti-Semitic diatribe. You're trying to set that up. That's what this whole call was about, or...
Everything was filthy. You know.
All right. Take a walk. Go eat a bologna or mortadella. You know what I'm saying? And if you don't want to eat the mortadella, you know what else you can do with it? You know? It's a little flexible. Indiana bred. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I would like to make a comment concerning this book from McClellan. I believe that this is nothing more than a ploy by George Soros to castrate, if you will, President Bush before he gets out of office to lower public opinion about him so that when we have to attack this Islamo-fascists in Iran, public opinion will be low enough that Congress won't get behind him to give him the orders to do it.
Possibly. Possibly another attempt to deter the military. But remember this. The phony spy, Valerie Plame, who screamed that she was outed by Libby, had a husband who wrote his own book that was called The Politics of Truth, Inside the Lies That Led to War and Betrayed My Wife's CIA Identity. It went nowhere. But guess who published it? Okay, the book was full of garbage. It was like rotten mortadella. It was published in 2004 by Carroll and Graff, which happens to be another publisher associated with the money changer in the temple, George Soros. There has to be Senate hearings immediately, but there's no Republican Party anymore. So how can there be Senate hearings? Okay. So that's it. That's the story, you know. I told you that. I told you the story. Here's another one that came out by this guy, Joe Wilson, Inside the Lies That Led to War and Betrayed My Wife. On and on, on and on and on and on and on and on. Another book put out by the left wing. You can't even trust publishers anymore. Everything has been sold down the river. You click on the link for Public Affairs Books, which published McClellan's book. Guess what you're going to find? You'll find books by John and Teresa Carey. Boom. That's right. John and Teresa Carey also published by them. Did you understand this? Do you understand this? That I have it on the radio for you today. And all you're going to hear tomorrow from the golfer and the wall banger is this. That's all you're going to hear. So you may as well talk about it now. That's all. You may as well get ahead of the curve before the wall bangers probably stop sipping the wine right now and eating the Kobe, the leftover Kobe steaks from the barbecue over the weekend. I think that even he figure it's 11 minutes to 9 over there in Florida. He's probably sitting there on a couch in his underwear listening to the show for some ideas for tomorrow with the headphones and the translator. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So there it is. Soros allegedly connected to the McClellan book. It's all over the internet now. Little Green Football's had it up, and tomorrow it'll be the big talking point. I put it up on michaelsavage.com, linking to LGF. There's other big stories, much bigger than this garbage. The Texas Supreme Court ruled today the kids must be returned to their parents. That's a huge blow to the mean-faced, clipped-haired women in the Child Protective Services, a huge blow to the leprechaun and the others who egged the country on to hating these mothers and fathers and calling them sexually abusers and sex abusers and child sexual slavery, things like that. It's a terrible blow to the networks that have these lowlifes on them that will do or say anything to attract attention without any consequences. Terrible. But that's a big story. Another big story on my website is Iran arrests suspected converts to Christianity. That, of course, will not be published by the atheists in the midstream media who are all in bed with George Soros, God forbid the thought. Did anyone see the 60 Minutes piece a number of years ago about George Soros, which alleged, now I say alleged, and allegedly had pictures of him in a Nazi collaborator's uniform when in his native Hungary his father was the chief collaborator who was pointing out hidden Jews in the neighborhood? These are allegations that came up. Can anyone confirm or deny this? That George Soros, who claims to have become an atheist during that period, that horrible period when the Nazis were rounding up and killing Jews, that his family was allegedly collaborationist with the Nazis. Does anyone have any proof, or can they deny this? Now, here's another thing about the wonderful good man George Soros that I'd like to bring up. The man has made most of his fortune, so far as I know, in betting against currencies and betting on currencies. He's a money trader, in other words, in the temple of life. So he almost broke the English pound by betting against it. He almost bankrupted England. He made a billion dollars on that bet. He almost bankrupted the Malaysian currency, setting off a wave of anti-Semitism amongst moderate Muslims in Malaysia. Now, here's a man who is a vulture capitalist. You see, there are varieties of capitalists. There are capitalists who make a lot of money, honestly, by providing a product, and then they give some of it to decent charities. That's one variety of capitalism. They create a service or a product. Then there are other kinds of capitalists who make money on money, producing nothing and servicing nothing, and they are evil. And then they use their money to defame capitalism in order to bring about Marxism. You get the difference? That's what I'm talking about. Eric on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, you know, this, just to say real quick, this is probably the first I've called in a week where I didn't have to press one for English. So, you know, that's good. But about Soros, a couple days ago, from his own mouth, he gave an interview to a financial website, and he said he blamed this whole thing, everything that's going on in America, on Ronald Reagan. He said Reagan created this whole magic, this whole majestic quality about the free markets. So right there, you know, we don't have to speculate whether he's...
Why would a man who made billions of dollars betting against the currencies of nations be against capitalism, Eric?
I think it's because
he's interested in only in power. Remember, in capitalism, we have a modicum of power at the ballot box, although it can be stolen by one rotten, stinking judge. Still in all, we still have recourse at the ballot box and on talk radio, where we can actually call a show and say something, while newspapers, which are dying, don't let you express yourself at all. We're the last vestige of freedom in the country. The internet doesn't count, because usually it's idiots who are lynch mobs sitting there writing to each other. Lynch mobs typing in dirty underwear.
Savage.